Chapter 17. The 5 a.m. club members become heroes of their lives. Live like a hero. That's what the classics teach us. Be a main character. Otherwise, what is life for? J.M. Coetzee. The helipad in Cape Town, South Africa, is on the V&A waterfront, a place where tourists ride the Cape Wheel, yacht racers replenish their supplies for courage-filled, adrenaline-fueled ocean contests, fishing charters may be booked, and strong morning coffee can be found. The bubbly brunette with librarian glasses made sure the liability waivers were signed by the billionaire, the entrepreneur, and the artist. She then stood on a leather sofa, made notes on her checklist, and provided her three VIP clients with the safety briefing that was mandatory before their helicopter whisked them to Robben Island. As you know, Robben Island, a barren, not-so-huge, shark-surrounded, ominous-looking parcel of land, sitting not so far from the coast of Cape Town, is where Nelson Mandela was confined to an enormously tiny prison cell for 18 of the 27 years he was imprisoned. Over time, this great hero of the world was attacked, abused, and otherwise mistreated. And yet he replied to this bad behavior with olive branches, seeing the good in his captors and guarding his hope for a democratic nation where all people would be equals. Speaking about Mahatma Gandhi, Einstein once said, "Generations to come will scarce believe that such a one as this ever in flesh and blood walked upon this earth." The same could be expressed of Mr. Mandela. "It's an absolute pleasure to have you here for your short trip over to the island," the woman indicated politely. "South Africans are remarkably well-mannered and thoughtful people." The billionaire wore a black baseball cap with the phrase, "To lead is to be of use," stitched on the front of it. "You'll have to take that off once you step onto the helipad, young man," the woman told him with a golden glimmer in her eye. The billionaire beamed. "I think she likes me," he whispered to his companions. "Today's our last day together," he added matter-of-factly. After the safety instruction had been delivered, the billionaire, the entrepreneur, and the artist were escorted out of the building and into a paved holding area, where two weather-beaten picnic tables sat. Though it was sunny, the winds were gusty. The billionaire removed his hat. "I feel a little anxious," thought the billionaire. "I've never been to Robben Island. I've read a lot about what went on there under the inhumane and evil system of apartheid, which ranked the treatment of people according to their color of skin, with no consideration for the caliber of their character or the quality of their hearts." A serious-looking young man wearing a slim raincoat, khaki trousers, and boating shoes emerged from one of the empty maintenance bays and requested that the billionaire and his students follow him out to the helipad. An army green helicopter sat at the center of the area, with its rotors spinning impressively. The pilot was at the controls, adjusting dials, knobs, and the like. The young man meticulously made sure that all three clients were properly situated in the aircraft for a safe and even weight distribution, then placed a headphone with a microphone onto the billionaire's head. "Good morning," boomed the billionaire enthusiastically to the helicopter pilot as the rotors accelerated. The pilot's face could not be seen beneath his helmet, aviator sunglasses, and face protector, and he refused to say a word. "Not so friendly," muttered the billionaire, remaining both somewhat nervous, yet positively excited for this once-in-a-lifetime experience that was about to unfold. The helicopter started rising, slowly initially, then ascending quickly. "The trip will take about 5 minutes. Winds and sea swells are extra strong today," was all the pilot spoke, and even this he voiced curtly. The billionaire, the artist, and the entrepreneur remained quiet. Each of them simply stared at Robben Island, a landmass that seemed more vast and even more brutal as they neared it. The aircraft landed on a pad surrounded by low trees, and as it did, seven springboks gracefully vaulted by. Yes, seven springboks. At the same time, it began to rain, and another double rainbow, like the one that had appeared at the dolphin swim in Mauritius, extended across the full length of the horizon that intersected with the Atlantic Ocean. All very special, observed the artist, arm in arm with his wife. We've definitely entered the magic, replied the billionaire in a respectful tone that conveyed an enormous appreciation for the opportunity to experience Robben Island, and at the same time delivered a sense of sadness for the valuable lives that had been ruined there. The pilot lingered in the cockpit, pressing buttons and turning off the helicopter, while his three passengers exited onto the asphalt landing space and silently took in the scene. From out of nowhere, an old pickup truck with KSA marked on the side raced toward them, leaving voluminous clouds of dust in its wake. You're not supposed to be here, shouted the driver, clearly a security guard, in a thick South African accent once he had reached the helicopter. He remained in his vehicle. Because of the weather, Robben Island has been closed to the public, he called forcefully. The ferries have all stopped running. No vessel can come to the port area here, and no helicopters are allowed to land. You should have known about this. You should not be here, the officer emphasized, adding, Who are you people? The guard did remain professional at all times, but he was visibly surprised, and obviously mildly shaken, perhaps imagining that the occupants of the aircraft had planned some kind of ground assault, and thinking the unexpected visitors had illicit intentions. All is good here, the pilot said with a firmness and confidence not often seen. He was now standing outside the helicopter and began to walk slowly toward the man in the truck, first adjusting his shirt, then arranging his helmet, which he kept on. The pilot was not young. You could detect this from the way he walked. This is a special day for them, remarked the pilot, his voice getting louder. These people have come a long way to see the prison cell where Nelson Mandela was jailed. They have come to view the limestone quarry, where he was forced to hack away at stones for over a decade, in the torturous sun that reflected off the rock, to the point where it damaged his eyesight permanently. They want to view the courtyard where the statesman would exercise and throw tennis balls with confidential messages inside to his fellow political prisoners in the next cell block. They need to go to the spot where Nelson Mandela's manuscript for Long Walk to Freedom, his autobiography, would be secretly buried in the dirt after he'd spent many hours working on it. They need to experience, at least a little, the suffering Mr. Mandela endured over his 18 grueling years here. And they must learn about how, even though he was so viciously treated, a theft of many of the best years of his life, once he was released, he chose to forgive all those who had been so cruel to him. The pilot stopped in front of the pickup truck. These people want to be genuine heroes themselves, I hear, in their professional and in their private lives. They wish to be leaders of their productivity, icons in full-on expression of their mastery, and perhaps even pathblazers in the fulfillment of a better humanity. Our world has never been so in need of pure heroes as it is today. And as I always teach when I present from the platform, why wait for them when you have it in you to become one of them? Wouldn't you agree, Stone? Asked the pilot, turning to speak to the billionaire, whose mouth instantly fell completely open. The pilot then, ever so gingerly, almost in slow motion, took off his face guard. Next, he shed his sunglasses, and finally he removed his helmet. The billionaire, the entrepreneur, and the artist were astonished by what they saw. It was the Spellbinder. Sterile and calculating fluorescent lighting kept the prison on Robben Island hauntingly eerie, even during the daytime, and feeling frugal, brutal, and unsparing. A set of invisible hands seemed to be guiding the members of the 5 a.m. club on that fantastic South African morning because, by some precious symphony of synchronicity, the billionaire would call it the magic. The security guard who had raced up in the dusty pickup truck was a huge follower of the Spellbinders. And I'm your number one fan kind of fan. He loved the Spellbinders' work that much. And so, you won't believe this, but it really did happen. The head of housekeeping, after receiving a green light from the guard, started the tour bus that was out of commission that day because of the bad weather, and drove it to where the visitors stood. She also asked one of the few guides still on the island to raise the flag and open the prison for a totally private tour. Just for the billionaire, the entrepreneur, the artist, and the spellbinder. In every life, especially the hardest ones, doorways of possibility and gateways into the miraculous swing open, revealing the reality that everything that each one of us experiences is part of some intelligent, and yes, often illogical plan, meant to draw us nearer to our greatest powers, most wonderful circumstances, and highest good. Everything we go through as we travel through a life is, in truth, a fantastic orchestration designed to introduce us to our truest talents, connect us with our most sovereign selves, and deepen our intimacy with the glorious hero that lives inside each of us. Yes, within every single one of us. And that does mean you. The tour guide, who also happened to be a former political prisoner, was a large man with a gruff voice. As he led his guests toward the cell where Nelson Mandela was forced to live for so many long and harsh years, he answered each of the questions they asked. "Did you know Nelson Mandela?" queried the spellbinder thoughtfully. "Yes, I served with him for 8 years here on Robben Island." "What was he like as a person?" asked the artist, appearing overwhelmed by the emotions that he was feeling as they walked down the main corridor of the jail that had been home to so many atrocities during the apartheid era. "Oh," said the guide gently, with a gracious and even wise smile across his face, "that man was a humble servant." "And what was Nelson Mandela like as a leader?" pressed the entrepreneur. "Tremendous, dignified, inspirational by the way he handled himself and all he went through. Every time he met one of his fellow leaders, often it was here in this courtyard," commented the guide as he stepped into the area where the political prisoners would walk, talk, plan, and stand. "He would ask, 'Are you learning?' He'd also often say, 'Each one, teach one.' In this way, mentoring his associates on the importance of sharing their daily learning to increase the leadership capability of all those around them. Mr. Mandela understood that education is the ultimate highway into freedom. That man was treated so poorly. All those hours of back-breaking work in the limestone quarry, all the degradation and humiliation. A few years after he came here, he was ordered to dig a grave in the prison yard, and then to lie in it," the tour guide added. "He must have thought that was the end," reflected the billionaire softly. "Probably," replied the guide. "Instead, the guards unzipped their pants and urinated over him." The spellbinder, the billionaire, the entrepreneur, and the artist all looked down. "We all have our own Robben Islands that can keep us imprisoned, I guess," the billionaire mused. "As we go through life, we endure our own trials and injustices. Nothing as severe as what went on here, of course. I read that Nelson Mandela said his greatest regret was not being allowed out of this prison to attend the funeral of his eldest son after he was killed in a car accident," expressed the billionaire. He looked up to the sky. "I guess we all have our regrets, and no one gets out without their own ordeals and tragedies." The tour guide pointed to the fourth window, to the right of the entrance into the courtyard. "There," he stated, "that's Nelson Mandela's cell. Let's go in." The cell was incredibly small. No bed. A small wooden table that the prisoner would kneel at to write in his journal, as there was no chair. A concrete floor and a brown woolen blanket, with green and red flecks in it. For the first year of his imprisonment, Nelson Mandela wasn't even permitted to wear long pants, though it was freezing over the South African winter. He was given only a thin shirt and flimsy shorts. When he showered, the guard stood and watched this elderly man standing naked in an attempt to humiliate and break him. When it was time to eat, he was given food unfit for an animal. When letters would arrive from his wife and children, often they wouldn't be delivered. Or if they were, they would be significantly censored. All this was carefully done to crush Mr. Mandela's spirit, the guide explained. It seems to me all that he endured in this shoebox of a jail cell, on this desolate island encircled by a raging ocean, developed him, strengthened him, and opened him. The prison became his crucible. The mistreatment became his salvation, leading him into his natural power, highest humanity, and fullest state of unstained heroism. In a world of such selfishness, apathy, and people disconnected from what it means to be human, he used what he was presented with to grow into an advanced soul on the planet, a man who would show the rest of us what leadership, fortitude, and love looked like. And in so doing, he became one of our great emblems of forgiveness and finest symbols of peace, the spellbinder offered. Yes, indeed, replied the tour guide. When Mr. Mandela was ultimately released from Robben Island, he was transferred to what is now called Drakenstein Correctional Center, between Paarl and Franz Hoek. His ascension to the presidency of South Africa was inevitable, so he was being prepared to assume the position and to lead a free and enormously divided nation. During that final period of his incarceration, he was given the warden's home, and on the day of his release, he walked out of this residence over to a long paved road with a guard post and a white gate at the end of it. Nelson Mandela was asked by prison personnel if he'd prefer to be driven down this road to freedom. He refused, and indicated simply that he would rather walk. And so, this transformational leader and history maker who has left a legacy that will inspire many generations took halting steps toward his long-awaited liberation. The tour guide took a long, weary breath. Then he carried on. Mr. Mandela was given a country on the cusp of a civil war, yet somehow he managed to become a unifier instead of a destroyer. I still remember the words from the famous speech he gave during one of his trials. During my lifetime, I have dedicated myself to this struggle of the African people. I have fought against white domination, and I have fought against black domination. I have cherished the ideal of a democratic and free society in which all persons will live together in harmony and with equal opportunities. It is an ideal for which I hope to live for and to see realized. But, if it needs be, it is an ideal for which I am prepared to die. Mr. Riley cleared his throat. He kept looking at the cement floor of the tiny cell. Mr. Mandela was a true hero, confirmed the guide. After his release, he invited the prosecutor who demanded the death penalty for him to dinner. Can you believe that? And he asked one of the jailers who watched over him here on Robben Island to attend his inauguration as the president of South Africa. Really? The entrepreneur asked quietly. Yes, that's a fact, responded the tour guide. He was a real leader, a man of genuine forgiveness. The spellbinder raised a finger to signal he wished to share another point. Nelson Mandela wrote, "As I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison." He also said that to be free is not merely to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances the freedom of others, the guide added, and that no one is born hating another person because of the color of his skin, or his background, or his religion. People must learn to hate, and if they can learn to hate, they can be taught to love, for love comes more naturally to the human heart than its opposite. I read he'd often get up around 5 a.m. and run on the spot for 45 minutes, then perform 200 sit-ups, and then do 100 fingertip push-ups. That's the reason I'm always doing my push-ups, the billionaire contributed, somewhat awkwardly. Said the tour guide before continuing. Mr. Mandela came into this cell as a hot-headed, angry, hostile, and militant young man. It was who he grew into here in this prison that made him the icon we all now revere. as Archbishop Desmond Tutu taught us. Suffering can either embitter us or ennoble us. Thankfully, Madiba, which was his clan name, chose the latter. "All the best men and women of the world have one thing in common," said the spellbinder. "Extreme suffering. And each of them evolved into their greatness because they chose to leverage their circumstances to heal, purify, and uplift themselves." The spellbinder then pulled out a learning model from his jacket, the final one that the two students would see. It was called the Heroic Human Circle. You'll find it on the enhancement. "These are the virtues each of us must aspire to become world changers and heroes for the benefit of a better society," said the spellbinder. His voice filled this morning with hints of both melancholy and immense strength. "Leadership is for everyone. Each of us, no matter where we live, what we do, what's happened to us in the past, and what we're experiencing right now, must release the shackles of blame, chains of hate, leg irons of apathy, and prison bars of ordinary that keep us in slavery to the dark forces of our lowest nature. Every one of us must rise each morning, yes, at 5 a.m., and do everything we can possibly do to unfold our genius, develop our talents, deepen our character, and escalate our spirits. Each of us must do this across our world." The spellbinder began to cry as he went on. "We all must break free from our private jails that incarcerate our glory and keep our nobility in bondage. Please remember that gifts and talents neglected become curses and sorrows." The spellbinder paused. "It's your time," he stated, looking directly into the eyes of the entrepreneur and the artist. The Heroic Human Circle framework had been placed on the small table in the chamber that sat under the window with bars. The spellbinder dragged it to the center of the space, so it became the focus in the prison cell on that very special day. The spellbinder then asked the billionaire, the entrepreneur, the artist, and the tour guide to crowd around the diagram. They held one another's hands. "Yes, no matter what struggles we face and what adversities we will endure, no matter what attacks, humiliation, and violence are visited on us, we must persist. We must continue. We must stay strong. We must live our luminous nature and magnify our sovereign selves. Even if it feels the whole world is against us, this is truly what makes us human beings. Even if it seems the light will never transcend the darkness, keep making your walk to freedom. Model what's highest for the rest of us. Exemplify grace for the majority of us. Demonstrate actual love for all of us. Now is your moment," said the spellbinder, raising a hand and placing it on the arm of the artist. He gently rested the other one on the shoulder of the entrepreneur. A quiet smile stretched across his face. He looked poised and serene. "Time for what?" wondered the artist. "To start your pilgrimage," was the simple reply.
"To where?" asked the entrepreneur, looking a little confused.
"To a territory called Legacy," indicated the spellbinder. "A lot of people are tourists at this place. For fleeting minutes of their precious mornings, they think about the body of work they've built and what it is that they'll leave behind once they die. For brief intervals, before they get distracted, they reflect on the quality of their productivity, the degree of their decency, and the depth of their impact. For mere short stints, before the bustle of being busy consumes them again, they pause to contemplate how beautifully they've lived and how helpful they were. They are mere visitors to this realm." Mr. Riley lifted his arms high,
as he listened to his mentor's words.
I love my life. I will become an even better leader. I will make an even greater contribution. And I'll upgrade into a much more inspirational human being,
he whispered mostly to himself.
The distinguished heroes of humankind, resumed the spellbinder, were citizens and lifetime inhabitants of this territory of legacy. It was their homeland, and this is what ultimately made them legendary. The mighty mission they constructed their lives around was to exist for a cause that was larger than themselves. So when they died, they left our world brighter than they found it.
We all come with an expiration date, added the billionaire. None of us knows how long we get to live.
True, agreed the entrepreneur.
Today, the spellbinder declared, and this very moment, deserves and demands your commitment to become sublimely creative, pristinely productive, decadently decent, and of service to many. Please stop postponing your mastery. No longer resist your primal power. Refrain from allowing the shadow forces of fear, rejection, doubt, and disappointment to dim the light of your most luminous self. This is your time, and now is your day, to make your leap in your original way into the rare air of the finest leaders who have ever lived, and to enter the universe of the true masters, eminent virtuosos, and authentic heroes who have been responsible for all progress of civilization.
All five were still huddled in the circle. Mr. Riley began to yodel a little before the spellbinder's strong stare helped him to tone it down. They smiled at one another, a clear gesture of mutual respect.
To lead is to inspire others by the way that you live. To lead is to walk through the fires of your hardest times, to step up into forgiveness. To lead is to remove any form of mediocrity from infiltrating the quarters of your life in a dazzling celebration of the majesty that is your birthright. To lead is to turn your terrors into triumphs and translate each of your heartbreaks into heroism. And more than all else, to lead is to be a force for good on this tiny planet of ours. Today, you get to accept this grand call to raise the standard by which you live out the remainder of your life.
Or at least starting tomorrow,
the billionaire suggested with a mischievous grin. Starting at 5 a.m., they all said together. Own your morning. Elevate your life.